This is Morgan Michael, welcoming you to Kindsight 101, the podcast, where you'll hear from world-renowned educational leaders about the mobilizing power of kindness, together by challenging our assumptions and venturing beyond the status quo in education. We can make a big impact, one small act at a time.
When people are kind to you, it fills your cup, it overflows your soul. It makes you feel complete, like everything's right with the world. And so when you're kind to others, you can fill that for them as well and make them feel more complete.
Tamara Letter is a mom, tech integrator for her district, educator, and recent author of the incredible book, A Passion for Kindness. You can find her on Twitter, at Tamara Letter, by searching the hashtag #PassionForKindness, TamaraLetter.com, and by buying her freshly minted book, A Passion for Kindness, anywhere you buy your books. Can't wait to hear some of the responses you have about this amazing interview. Hi, Tamara. It's such a pleasure to have you on Kindsight 101. I'm really, really excited for this conversation.
Well, thank you for inviting me to be on your show. I'm so excited to talk with you today.
Awesome. So I'd like to start right away by jumping back to 2012, which is when I believe you first started blogging after a birthday party rack adventure, Random Acts of Kindness adventure. What about that moment made you want to take it further than your immediate experience? And what made you want to take kindness public?
Well, the experience of having the 40 Random Acts of Kindness for my 40th birthday, kind of looking back, it was kind of a selfish thing to do, actually. It was more about me wanting to do something fun for my birthday. I didn't really anticipate it having the domino effect that it's had. But as I started to do the different random acts of kindness and I saw firsthand how those acts of kindness were impacting other people, I was just spellbound by the whole experience. And it really kind of shifted my mindset about what is this kindness really about? What, you know, it's not just this novelty, this thing that you do that sounds really great and makes people look at you with awe, but it really has impact on other people's lives. And some of the stories that came out of those first 40 acts really just struck me to the core. And I guess what was so pivotal for me was kind of the support of my friend Lisa, who pushed me to kind of go public. She's like, you need a blog, you need to share it with the world. And it took a lot to kind of dive into that and to be brave to share the stories with the world, because you're always worried about what other people are going to say or think or how they're going to judge you or, you know, if they're going to misunderstand your purpose in doing it. And I realized that by sharing the stories, that that's actually what continues that connectivity with the different people that I was doing the acts of kindness for and just with other people that were watching the kindness acts. And, you know, I didn't realize then in 2012 the research behind kindness and how whether you see an act of kindness or you do an act of kindness or even you receive an act of kindness, how you actually scientifically you have these endorphins and all these chemicals going through your body, creating this feel-good feeling within you. And so once I discovered that link, I realized, wow, you know, telling the stories is kind of important because it can guide other people along the way and give them some examples of things they could do. And that's how the seeds start to scatter once we get good ideas from other people. So it really started with those 40 acts. What really kind of catapulted me into continuing that was the tragedy at Sandy Hook in December of that year. And with the shooting, and Ann Curry had posted a challenge on Twitter for people to do 26 acts of kindness, one in memory of each life lost during that tragedy. And right then I knew that this wasn't just a little fun thing to do for my birthday. It was actually becoming part of who I am. And so I continued to do those acts of kindness in memory of those individuals. And then it just kept continuing and I haven't stopped since.
I love that connection. And I think that there's sort of this hopeful element to tragedy when you can take action and do something to make the world a better place in spite or sort of within the context of that sort of thing. I just think it's such a powerful, powerful mobilizer for, you know, that hope piece. I'd love you to maybe even just within the context of those 40th
birthday rack activities, if you could give a few ideas of some of the things that had a profound effect on other people, because I think oftentimes we all want to be kind, but people just love getting inspired and hearing all these wonderful real life ideas that came to light and some of the connections that you made even just during that time.
Sure. The first 40, it was interesting because I'm kind of a planner. So I like to have things all mapped out, and I had planned out, okay, my birthday is in September. So I'm going to start then, and I'm going to do so many a month and to work out through the whole year. And sometimes even in your best plans, people, you know, life kind of taps you on the shoulder and changes that course. And that's exactly what happened with me. I had several months before I had even started, that initial plan, I found myself in a grocery store and the person in front of me couldn't pay for their groceries. Mm-hmm. And I felt that little pull on my heart to pay for their groceries, which is something that I hadn't quite felt before, or I hadn't paid attention to actually put that into action before. Mm-hmm. And in that moment, you have to get brave. You have to be brave to be kind. So I reached forward and I just handed the cashier my credit card and was like, I've got it. No worries. Don't worry about it. You got to feed your child. She had a child on her hip. Mm-hmm. And it was in that moment when I saw that person's expression, mm-hmm. and the tone in her voice when she thanked me profusely for the kindness. It's just that connection in that moment when you realize, wow, this was what I was supposed to do, and this is what's meant to happen. And sometimes it's those little tiny moments where you're sowing seeds in other people to remind them mm-hmm. that there's good in the world. Mm. And so it's really important to listen to those whispers on your heart and to have empathy for people in various situations and then to act on that. Sometimes the acts of kindness were absolutely completely random like that. They weren't anticipated. They just in the right place at the right time kind of thing. Mm-hmm. There were a couple of other ones that were a little bit more planned out. I had a friend of mine who was wanting to adopt some children from Africa, and she did not have all the money she needed. It's very expensive to adopt children. Mm-hmm. And she was doing everything she could possibly think of to raise money to afford this adoption of these children. And I just, again, felt that little tug on my heart to go through my house and find lots of things. She was having a yard sale. And I thought, you know, I've got these collectibles over here that I've had in my house for years and years, and they're treasured in my heart and I love them so much, but they could be worth more than the average thing at a yard sale. So if I donated them to the yard sale, maybe she would get a little bit more money. And that would help her in her quest to have some children in her life. And so I did. I sacrificed something that meant a lot to me so that way a friend of mine could have something that meant a lot to her. Mm. And it's that ripple effect, you know. I could have easily just given her money, but it was also part of a sacrifice too, because that's kindness is a little bit of the give and take and the ebb and flow from the heart to another person.
Absolutely. And I love, even just in your earlier story, this idea of you have to be brave to be kind. And I know our mutual friend Barbara Gruner talks about that and how it's not always easy to be kind because you never know how somebody's going to react to it. It's even just this act of sort of stepping forth and offering yourself in this fairly vulnerable way. What's your take on that?
I'm in complete agreement. I did not realize exactly how brave you have to be until I was put in that situation. You have to step out of your comfort zone, and connecting with strangers especially is a little disconcerting. I'm an extrovert, so I really enjoy being around people and with people, and you would think having that personality characteristic that it would be easy for me, but it's actually not so easy to go up to a complete stranger and acknowledge something that's happening in the moment that you're not sure if they really want to be acknowledged or not, mm-hmm. and to offer help. You know, some people, they don't, it's not that they don't want your help, but they're so taken aback in the moment that you are offering to help that it puts them in an awkward predicament of knowing how to respond to you and if you're serious and how, what should they say? You know, it's just awkward.
Yeah.
Sometimes no, it's just awkward.
Absolutely.
But if you don't do those things, the alternative is you just go through life, living your life in your way for yourself, and you don't have this lifeline that you can throw out to other people when they need it. And I truly believe that we are better together, even if we don't know the people that we're helping or that are helping us. I think there's times when we have the exact thing that somebody else needs. And I think there's times when someone else has exactly what we need. And it isn't always about having to do something big and grand and expensive. It could be something just as simple as smiling at people as you pass them. And that one spark, that one moment, that one instant of recognition where all of a sudden they realize, hey, somebody in this world noticed me. Mm-hmm. That adds value to their life. That adds value to their day. And those are just as important.
Yes. And I think there's sort of this fundamental universal need that we all have to be seen, right? And I think being able to move through the world with that knowledge and understanding that we actually have so much power, even just in those little moments, I think it's a really profound realization and learning. And, you know, when I think about, you know, you're saying that we don't have to have these really big, grandiose, expensive generosity moments. We can also just do little things. I really love your Rack Friday, your Black Friday sort of spin, and how you do really covert operations. You go out and you very sneakily infuse kindness into people's day. Can you talk a little bit about that and how it got started?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's funny. Because I write stories about my kind acts, sometimes people assume that I share every single story about every single act of kindness I do, which I do not.
Sure.
So many acts of kindness that just go unseen and untold. But Rack Friday is one of my favorite ones to actually share the stories about because it's the complete opposite of what you would expect to do on that day. Rack Friday is traditionally known as Black Friday. It's the first day after Thanksgiving. It's traditionally a big shopping day here in the U.S. And it's gotten a lot of bad press over the years. When I turn the TV on and they're talking about people going out into the stores to shop, the media often emphasizes the negative aspect of it, whether it's the crowds of people or situations where people are fighting over things, trying to get that, you know, that quintessential gift that only one, you know, one piece or product is in the store.
Yes.
And so I was reading some posts by, there's a group called the Random Acts of Kindness Foundation, and they have a Facebook group for Racktivists, and a Racktivist is someone who does random acts of kindness. And you can always get more information off of their website about that. But they have a little Facebook group for their activists. And it was in that Facebook group that people were talking about acts of kindness that they were doing throughout the year. And someone happened to mention doing acts of kindness on Black Friday. And then more people kind of chimed in. It was several years ago. And they talked about Rack Friday instead of Black Friday. And I thought, oh my gosh, that is so cute. I love, love, love that acronym. I love how that's kind of got that little switch. So it was in that group that I first kind of heard of that phrase, but it's been used in several other contexts as well. So the premise that I do is I kind of pre-plan a little bit of what I want to do. It's more like me making sure that I have all my tools in place because I don't quite know exactly what I'm going to do the whole day. But I do lots of different acts of kindness throughout the day, and I kind of document it because I like to write a blog post about all the different things I do. And the things are so, so tiny, small, and minor. It could be me not taking the closest parking space in the parking lot and leaving it for someone else, which they don't even realize is an act of kindness.
Yes.
It could be me hanging up clothes that have been discarded in a ladies' fitting room on the floor, and that's less work that salesperson has to do later. Sometimes I'll have little $5 gift cards that I've pre-purchased on a different day, and I'll just leave them in random places with just a little note of positivity with it. I think last year, it was something as simple as there was an older lady that was having difficulty walking, and I just stopped her and asked if I could find her a cart for the things she was trying to carry in her hands, and I went running around the store to get her a cart. You know, it's just little things like that where you're just more aware of people as people and ways that you can brighten their day.
I love it. And you've also even cut coupons in anticipation of this day to surprise people who might be in a store wanting to get 20% off of their purchase or things like that as well, right?
Absolutely. Those sale flyers come out a couple of days before Black Friday, and it's a great opportunity to, you know, just take a few minutes, cut them out. And then when you happen to be in those stores, you can either leave it somewhere on top of something for someone to discover, or you can just hand it to someone right in the line. And it's pretty amazing to me how many people that are shopping that don't have the coupons, and they're so appreciative when all of a sudden they get 20% off of all the things they have in their hands. So that's always a delightful little moment there too.
It is. And I just think it's so generous, and I think it's the forward thinking that makes it really special, is that you know in your heart when you're clipping those coupons or you're writing that kind note that you're going to stick in a little purse for somebody, that you're doing that ahead of time, thinking and anticipating about how great that's going to feel for them. And it makes you feel good all along the way. So I just think I would like to switch gears a little bit again and have a chance to talk about the evolution of your one word. I've really enjoyed adopting that process as an alternative to a New Year's resolution. And I know that it's guided you in many respects within your own journey. So if you look back to 2016, your word was joy. In 2017, resilience. 2018, inspire. And this year, uplift. How has this process of the one word sort of led you through your professional journey? And I mean, within the context of that, of course, the book, how has that one word guided you?
Well, the one word has completely transformed my perspective of resolutions, because I was failing miserably every year. Whenever I would try to come up with resolutions, oh, it's just like everyone, I'm going to do so great in January. And by May, I just was beyond the brick wall and there was no way to save it. But yeah, when I adopted the one word for 2016, that December, lots of little seeds of joy had already been planted on my soul. And I kind of was already swirling with this whole concept of one word. But I saw Dean Sharesky at the VISTI conference present a presentation about joy. And I thought it was so intriguing because it was a technology conference. It's our state technology conference. Mm-hmm. And the closing keynote speaker is talking about joy. Like, he's not talking about technology. What is up with that, right? But his presentation moved me to tears because he was talking about the humanity aspect of it all. Mm-hmm. And so in that moment when he hit that very last part of the closing keynote and he ended, and everyone just erupted with applause, I realized, wow, like, I need more of that in my life. Mm-hmm. And in order for me to make that more in my life, I need to make a commitment for that. So that's when I decided, okay, joy is going to have to be a one word. And I didn't know how to do it. Like, how do you do a one word? I had no idea. I just felt like if I could just commit myself to having that as a word and then just try to be joyful, you know?
Yes.
There's no real rule book for the one word. Well, as luck would have it, I connected with some people on Twitter. Twitter is amazing. Oh, my graciousness, has completely, completely transformed my educational learning base. But I had connected with Akila Ellison and Teresa Hollerin, and they actually taught in my state. They taught a couple of hours away at Virginia Beach. And in their school district, they had this new thing they were doing about joy ambassadors.
Oh, wow.
Goodness, what? Joy ambassadors? Are you kidding me? You've got to be kidding. So I immediately reached out to them. I was like, hello, I'm not in your district, but by gosh, I'm a joy ambassador. What do I have to do? Like, where's my card? How do I sign up? And so I started just paying attention to things they were posting. I created a little list in my Twitter feed for joyful people. And anytime somebody posted things that, you know, referenced joy, I tagged them or I put them in that list. And I started to realize, wow, you know, when I make a decision to focus on joy, I actually do become a little bit more joyful in the process. And it's like that saying that, you know, you're the culmination of the five people that you hang around the most with. I started to realize, wow, if I hang around with joyful people, I tend to be a little joyful too.
Yes.
So that was a huge, huge mind shift for me, was realizing the power of choosing a word and following that word through it. And then it became almost funny, because by the end of the year, my students were bringing me presents that had the word joy on it, and kids were creating rocks. Like, everybody knew that was my word. Like, yes. It wasn't a secret. And then as we started moving into 2017, my mom was dying. And I'm an only child from her. And so, well, how do you do that? How do you go from joy? What do you do for your next word? Because it's kind of hard to have joy when you're saying goodbye to the only person in your world that, you know, has raised you so closely. And so I really struggled to find a word for that next year, and resilience was just something that kept playing back and forth in my head of, you know what, it's going to be a tough year. There's no denying it. So let's find a way to get past it. Let's find a way to build back up. Let's acknowledge what's going to happen, because you can't change it.
Mm-hmm.
And let's find the good that comes out of it.
This is so beautiful. And I've heard your story about your mother's passing and how you actually infused joy and you held her hand and you were there together. And I've found that story incredibly inspiring and touching. And I was crying when I heard it the first time. Yeah.
I think joy prepared me for the resilience that I would need to get through that, because the joy that we discovered together as she started to falter in her life journey, we suddenly realized, you know, even the hardest, most painful moments that you go through still have a ray of sunshine of joy. And even in her final day, we were laughing. We were having a party in her room. I mean, it was just this paradox of enlightenment, of grief and sorrow and joy and peace, all mixed in together. But you need resilience to go through all of that and still keep walking.
Yeah.
And so that's what led me through 2017, because she died in May. I still had to get through the rest of my year.
Yeah.
And resilience is really what pushed me through, because there were many, many days where I just did not even know how. I mean, I couldn't even post pictures on social media, because I felt like I had no one to share them with. My mom was gone. What's the point, you know?
Yeah.
And so moving into the following year, I realized, wow, you know, my story matters, your story matters, and we all have these individual life journeys that have important lessons that other people can learn from. And the only way that that works is if we share our story. So it's almost, in a way, it kind of came full circle for me being brave to share my stories on my kindness blog, as I suddenly realized, wow, I need to share stories about life too, because it's in our life journeys and it's in the sharing of those stories that we can inspire and we can uplift.
You have an incredible story too. And I think your willingness to share it with such an open, brave, courageous heart is really what's so inspiring, I think, and what connects people so authentically to who you are. And that's a really, I think it's such an important quality, and it's such an important leadership quality, kind of part of this package of, you know, soft skills that people are saying are going to be so important to prepare our future leaders for the world, right? And being able to share those hard times and being able to see the humanity in people and in ourselves and be okay with that and discomfort sometimes, right?
Absolutely. Being vulnerable does not equate to weakness. In fact, you have to be really strong to share your vulnerabilities with other people, and you have to be even stronger to share them with a world of people you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes we don't give ourselves credit for that. We don't acknowledge how difficult that is. It would be so much easier for me just to have kept all of this inside. But there's a greater purpose. And when you can see that greater purpose and you can see how your story impacts other people in a positive way, then it's that driving force that pulls you to continue and to press on and to be brave and to find the strength and to share. And just like your podcast, as you're interviewing all these different people, it's so amazing because different stories will connect with different people for different purposes. Mm-hmm. And we're all needing that. Like we need to be recognized. We need to be valued. And we can, when we see ourselves in someone else's story, it reminds us that we're not alone and we can get through this. We can survive. There's other people out there that have survived this. Surely we can get through it too. And I think it is that realization that binds us together and makes us realize that it's going to be all right.
You bet. Absolutely. So tell me how this, now that you're here, someone has called it the year of Tamra. What, tell us about this book and how it came to be, because I think the blog posts are all of the steps that probably led up to that. I think your willingness to share your story and to feel it with all of your heart and being able to let people into that probably lay the groundwork. Tell us about how the book came to be and some of your favorite aspects of what you hope people learn from the book or take away from it.
Absolutely. So the book has been a seed planted on my heart for decades, and I just never even knew it. Never knew it. I actually had to have people in my family and other coworkers that have known me for years. I had to have them remind me that I have said on multiple times that I wanted to be an author and that I wanted to write a book. And I guess I like blocked all that out because I thought it was kind of a new idea. And they were like, no, you've been talking about this for years. I'm like, oh, really? Okay. And I think back to, it's so funny just when you look back. I mean, I double minored in psychology and English. I worked in the English department. I loved writing. I loved reading, but still hadn't quite, made that connection. And then once I started doing the different kind of things, I was like, wow, I wish there was a book out there that could have these kind of kindness stories, but also give me ideas and like resources and some other, like maybe some scientific, like I was really looking for something to read.
Yes.
And I couldn't find exactly what I was looking for. I could find books that had stories and I could find books that had some research, even though the research was relatively new. I couldn't find a book that kind of had it all in there. And I just felt that whisper on my heart that said, well, maybe that's because you're the one who's supposed to write it.
Mm-hmm.
And in that moment, there was such exhilaration in that eureka moment of, oh my gosh, maybe I am. And immediately I got slapped in the face with fear and apprehension and all of those negative thoughts in my head that want to constantly pull us down. Who do you think you are writing a book? You're not knowledgeable. You don't have this,
Yes.
What are you doing? And so I thought I was having to be brave writing those blog posts. Oh my goodness. That was easy compared to having to actually submit a proposal to a publisher.
Mm-hmm.
That was so frightening. Because the publishers were scary. The publishers were fine. It was just my fear of rejection.
Sure.
And fear of, having this dream of mine kind of all coming together from different aspects of my life and the very real possibility that somebody else would say, thanks, but no thanks, not good enough for us. So one of the things I did, I have a little bullet journal where I keep inspiring quotes and jot notes. And I had heard somebody say, if you can go through 99 rejections, but you get one acceptance, you win.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, okay, that's something I can control, right? So I made 100 boxes in my bullet journal with the intention of coloring in every rejection and being okay with it and hoping that before I got to the bottom, I would get someone that wanted to publish my story, because I knew I felt it was a good story and I knew I had the passion for it, but you never quite know how other people are going to receive your passion.
Absolutely. So
then I brainstormed who would my ideal publisher be, and I did a lot of research about different publishers out there, and I was so drawn to Dave Burgess's books. I had read Teach Like a Pirate years before. I had actually presented on Teach Like a Pirate for my district. I had read Lead Like a Pirate, which was written by Dave's wife, Shelley, and Beth Huff. And I just was like, oh my gracious, wait, they're publishing more books. And I was starting to pay attention. Wow, they've got, you know, Todd Nesloney's book is Kids Deserve It. And they've got this book over here and that book over there. And all of a sudden I was like, well, maybe I should send them a proposal. Okay, so then I went through a whole nother level of fear and frightening, you know, apprehension. But thankfully, I have amazing friends who heard the whisper on my heart, who I had opened up to, and they checked on me and they pushed me and they said, listen, no, you need to do this. And so I sent in the book proposal and received an affirmative. Let's go for it. Let's do it. And I spent the next 6 months pouring my soul out into this book. It is coming out in February. Mm-hmm. It's going to be 12 chapters, easy read, nothing stressful for you at all. But what gets me so excited about this book is not only sharing with others so many stories about my journey of kindness, but every single chapter is spotlighting somebody else, because this book is not all about me.
Yes.
I think there's so much value in uplifting others and shining spotlight on great things that other people do. And this book does exactly that. There are names mentioned throughout this book. I guarantee you read this book, you're gonna say, oh my goodness, I've heard of that person. Oh, I know that person. So many different people that are doing great things in the classroom, great things out of the classroom, people all around the world that are just having this unified vision of making the world a better place with kindness. And so many different ways you can do it. So I'm most excited about sharing other people's story within my book. But the book does include research. So if you're a research-based, analytical-minded person, we've got some spots for you. If you like book studies, we have study questions at the end of each chapter. If you're looking to connect with kindness organizations, we have a whole list of organizations in the back of the book. I mean, it's got a little bit of everything that you might want to help you continue your kindness journey too.
Fantastic. And the book is called A Passion for Kindness, and you can get it at any bookstore or any of the, probably the Amazon online, any of the places that you would normally get your books from. So inspiring. Before we get to our rapid fire portion, is there anything else that you'd like to leave our listeners with in terms of a little nugget of information, or maybe something that you really want to share with them before we move on?
I just encourage all of your listeners to just step out of your comfort zone. If you hear that little voice in your mind, or you feel that tugging on your heart to do something for somebody else, just trust that feeling, trust that voice, and just do it. You may not know why you're doing it. It might make you feel a little uncomfortable, but I guarantee you there's a purpose for it. So just be brave and do it.
Awesome. Thank you. So in a few words or less, what does kindness mean to you?
Kindness means completion. When people are kind to you, it fills your cup. It overflows your soul. It makes you feel complete, like everything's right with the world. And so when you're kind to others, you can fill that for them as well and make them feel more complete.
What one superpower or skill does an educator need to lead with in order to be effective?
I think educators need to be good listeners. I think educators need to be very perceptive and being able to read the signs that their students are giving them and build those relationships with those students, because that's where your true connections are going to last.
Beautiful. What quote or saying would you print on one of those quote cups that would be sold in bookstores across the world?
Well, I would probably print one of my favorite quotes. Nothing great is ever achieved without enthusiasm. That's by Ralph Waldo Emerson. And even though it's not my quote, I quote him all the time because it is so true. If you have passion in your soul, no matter what the topic is, you can do amazing things.
Amazing. And I think you embody that. I hear it in your voice. You see it, you know, you see it in all that you do. And it's really, truly inspiring. So, Tamara, I really want to thank you for being on the show today. I'd like to just give you a second to give my listeners a chance to connect with you, perhaps on various social media sites. Where can they find you?
So it's really easy to find me because most everywhere it's just my name. So if you're on Twitter, it's at Tamara Letter. That's T-A-M-A-R-A and then L-E-T-T-E-R. And on Instagram, it's at Tamara Letter. My website is www.tamaraletter.com. And if you're on Facebook and you like kindness, you can join our Passion for Kindness group by just typing that phrase into your search bar and clicking the little thing saying to join, and we'll accept your acknowledgement and get you in the group.
Fabulous. Thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a really inspiring and passionate conversation.
Well, thank you for inviting me to be on your show. I've loved talking with you today.
I want to thank you for the wonderful reviews that you've left for this podcast on iTunes. Your reviews make a big difference in helping other educators find this show. If you think that I'm doing good work here and you'd like others to get inspired and join our 21-day kindness challenge and movement, I'd love it if you would take a minute, head over to iTunes, and leave a review. Thank you so much. This has been another episode of Kindsight 101, the podcast. For links to resources mentioned in this episode, visit smallactbigimpact.com and click on our podcast and choose this episode number. Now, I'd love to give my audience a heads up about my new book, which will provide ideas, actionable strategies, and inquiry-based approaches to creating kinder classroom through serving the community. Subscribe to my blog for more information. Now, I would love to hear from you. What's the biggest insight that you gain from this conversation? Head over to our website, smallactbigimpact.com, leave a comment on our podcast page, or tag and connect with us on social media with the hashtag smallactbigimpact to share your inspiring story of kindness. Can't wait to hear from you.